We've been talking this hour about the splendor and the unpredictability of mountains. They are symbols of untamed wilderness. But some mountains have been tamed, or at least carved up. Take Mount Rushmore in South Dakota, that shrine to American democracy. Now, when you think about it, carving four giant heads into the side of a mountain is a kind of a bizarre idea. But then you have to understand the guy who did it. Gutzon Borglum was a larger-than-life figure, a man who not only believed in the great man theory of history, he considered himself one. John Tolliver tells the story of Mount Rushmore's creation in his book Great White Fathers. He told Ann Strangechamps that the idea first came from business boosters in South Dakota.
The Black Hills didn't have an Old Faithful, an El Capitan, so these business leaders said, well, how can we get people to steer their cars our way and bring some of their money with them? Someone had the idea, well, why don't we get somebody to carve something on the side of a mountain? We don't really care what it is. And they contacted one of the preeminent sculptors of the day, a man named Gutzon Borglum, this irascible, egomaniacal artist who had been working on a Confederate memorial on Stone Mountain, Georgia. And he said, sure, but I'd like to make it a national memorial. Let's not make it just a kind of a kitschy thing. Let's make it a sober, dignified memorial to American civilization, a shrine of democracy.
But it would take some kind of hubris or some, you know, driving ambition to think that you could carve sculptures this size into the side of a mountain.
Enormous hubris, just unapologetic hubris. Of course, in the 1920s, when Mount Rushmore was conceived, people were thinking colossally anyway. The big bridges and the big dams, the skyscrapers were beginning. The Titanic and the big ships had been built. So the idea that carving should be on the same scale seemed almost patriotic. Borglum also had extraordinary energy. He carved Mount Rushmore into his 60s. He would strap on that harness and climb down the side of that 500-foot cliff himself, grab a jackhammer, swing around like a mountain goat. Then he would rush off the mountain and drive several miles away, sort of like a painter would back off from his canvas and study a little nuance here, a shadow there, and rush back on the mountain, climb up again. Extraordinary energy. He'd have done the whole thing himself if he could have.
He's sort of an unsavory side to him as well, with some of that energy. I think somewhere in your book he notes to a friend that he'd stayed up half the night writing 3,000 words about the evils of alien races. And he had a connection to the Ku Klux Klan too, right?
Yeah, the part of Borglum's life we're not supposed to talk about. This is the sculptor of our shrine of democracy, after all, along with the Statue of Liberty, the great symbol of our American Republic. The part we're not supposed to talk about is the fact that right before Borglum came to South Dakota to carve Mount Rushmore, he was an active and ardent member of the reemerging Ku Klux Klan. And he wasn't just sympathetic to the Klan, he was right into the thick of the Klan leadership. And in fact, it was some of his internal squabbles with the Klan elite that drove him out of Georgia and induced him to come to South Dakota. And the National Park Service, in its presentation of Borglum and Mount Rushmore, doesn't like to dwell on the fact that it was a Klansman who built Mount Rushmore. Mm.
So there's this unsavory whiff of racism behind Mount Rushmore. Also, Mount Rushmore had been considered by the Lakota Sioux a very sacred mountain, and it was a kind of sacrilege that white Americans built this monument to their patriotic fathers.
Yes, that's true. There were several protests in the 1970s at the height of the American Indian Movement where Indians came and took over Mount Rushmore and hung banners from it and threatened to spread red paint on it. The Black Hills are the heart of everything that is, in the words of the Lakota Sioux. This is their Eden. They believe their people were born from the rock of the Black Hills. The mountain that Mount Rushmore is on is the equivalent of the Temple Mount. And so, having been driven from the Black Hills illegally, many Lakota Sioux and many Native Americans resent the fact that these four glowering white fathers are up there on their most sacred ground, almost as guardians to keep them away. And they won't settle. They want the Black Hills back.
Was Borglum aware of this at the time? I mean, how did he respond?
Borglum was aware that the Black Hills were sacred, and he was a friend of Indians and very understanding of them, although I'm not sure he understood the depth of their spiritual convictions. It was Borglum who brought Indians in when they had various dedication ceremonies, completion of the Washington face or the Jefferson face, and they'd bring in the Indians to give invocations and bang drums and do a little dance. And he was sympathetic to the cause of the Indians on the reservation. Did he consider stopping what he was doing? No way.
What a contradictory man, a member of the KKK and yet sympathetic to the Native Americans.
Well, great men are often a bundle of contradictions, you know, and patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel.
Tell me about the actual creation of Mount Rushmore. You mentioned earlier that Borglum had been strapped to a little chair or something. I mean, how risky, how dangerous was it to actually carve the whole thing?
Well, the creation of Mount Rushmore is an epic story, and it is a wonderful story. Borglum went looking for people to do the work, and there were a lot of out-of-work miners, hard rock miners, who lived in the neighboring towns. So we rounded them up. None of them knew much about art, and certainly none of them had ever carved anything. They just were strong guys who could handle a drill. And he had to come up with a system that they could follow. So he built a model of Mount Rushmore, 1 inch to the foot. He did the carvings of the four faces. So when he wanted to carve the nose of George Washington, say, he would put a little measuring device on top of the model and say, okay, go down this many inches and start drilling this much there, and then he would multiply by 12 and send these guys hanging by cables off the side of the mountain to start whacking away.
Well, I can't imagine you'd have much control either. I mean, we're talking about fairly precise shapes. I mean, these are, you know, eyes and noses, nostrils, the, you know, sharp curve of a lip. How do you do that with a jackhammer?
Inch by inch. They figured out how to use dynamite with these very small charges, and they could blast just an inch or two off of the surface with dynamite. It used it very delicately, almost like a laser. It's remarkable. Now, you're right. It was incredibly difficult, which makes the result that much more remarkable, because the amazing thing about Mount Rushmore, it isn't rudimentary. It isn't primitive. These are fine sculptures with real character. The faces have expressions. The lip of Thomas Jefferson looks like it's just about to curl into a smile. Teddy Roosevelt's eyeglasses, you think there's glass in them because Borglum carved just the little imprint of the glass frames around Roosevelt's cheeks and brow.
Borglum had hopes, I guess, that this huge monument would be, oh, this kind of great emblem of American civilization. I think he said that he hoped that 10,000 years from now, when archaeologists came upon Mount Rushmore, they'd get this immediate understanding of American civilization. Do you think Mount Rushmore does that?
Absolutely. Borglum liked the scale of Mount Rushmore. He compared it to the Sphinx or the pyramid because he wanted our civilization to be measured with the same ruler as the great ancient civilizations. It's a different experience when you walk up close to Mount Rushmore and you're surrounded by those four faces. It is awe-inspiring. It will melt the cynicism of almost any visitor and stir the patriotism of the most cynical American.
John Tolliver is the author of Great White Fathers, the story of the obsessive quest to create Mount Rushmore. He spoke with Anne Strangchamps.